My name is Christina Dixie. I am 44 years old. Today is February 11th, 2019, and I am speaking with Dr. Jill Douglas, who is a parent at the Housatonic Valley Waldorf School where I work. And we are recording this interview at the Housatonic Valley Waldorf School in Newtown, Connecticut.
Are we going to be leaning forward this whole time?
I think it's helpful because they tell us to stay a certain distance from the microphone.
Okay, that's right. Yeah. Unnatural.
So how did you come to Waldorf Education?
Well.
Oh, and tell us a little bit about yourself, too.
Okay.
Your background.
So I am a professor here in Connecticut at a university. I teach, research, and do service. Those are my three criteria for what my job is. And I'm a professor in speech language pathology. So, which brings me to how I came across Waldorf was it all started when I was working on my PhD. And when I was working on my PhD, the focus of many seminars was child language development and language and learning. And it was then that I started to have a critical eye of children's learning and the role that environment plays in children's learning. And I was studying and reading the texts of Vygotsky, Piaget, and Bruner, which were so far above me. but I think the conversation stuck as to what these people were even saying in their text. But, and one of the, a reoccurring theme was, it's based on constructivist theory, which I think in a roundabout way I'm going to describe, so that children are meaning makers, and they make meaning based on meaningful engagement, and that context is everything. So having a meaningful learning environment, a language and sensory rich learning environment, there's a high regard for role models, for the adults that surround them and the children that surround them, but that the adults should be providing this language and sensory rich and meaningful learning environment.
Yeah.
And it's about authentic learning opportunities as well. So I immersed myself in this constructivist theory. And then I also read on, you know, the unfortunate reality of what some schools do, which is very much decontextualized learning,
right,
and inauthentic learning opportunities. And it was then that I got a pit in my stomach, and me and my other 20-something-year-old friends, all who we were all pretty much single and no kids,
right,
had a moment of like, what are we going to do now that we know all this?
When you have kids.
When
someday.
I have kids, what are we going to do with this? This is going to be awful. This is awful. We know too much now. And so, and we know how good learning can be. And so anyway, I eventually do get married and get pregnant. And immediately when I got pregnant, I knew that of this daunting task of having to choose my child's school. And we were in the midst of moving. And so once we settled in Connecticut, we were in New Zealand, which that whole country is Waldorf, basically. But we were in New Zealand, and then we moved to Connecticut. And once I settled in Connecticut, I started looking into alternative schools. And
had you already encountered Waldorf as a pedagogy when you were in school, or not yet?
Not really.
Yeah.
It was most so Piaget, Vygotsky, Bruner are very much Reggio. I didn't know that term until I was researching schools, and everybody was saying, oh, Reggio is based on Vygotsky, Bruner, and all. And I was like, oh, there's a word for it. So so it's very Reggio-focused, but I had only come across Waldorf, a friend who adopted a child. Anyway, she was putting much of her story on Facebook of going through this adoption process of adopting an older child, and she was sending this child to Waldorf, mm-hmm. and it was in Michigan. And all I know is this child was wearing like fairy wings, and like everything was beautiful, and there was lighting of candles for her birthday, and I was just like, this is amazing. This must just be a Michigan thing. And so it was the first time I encountered it. And so it stuck with me because I thought that was just too magical. Like, we don't have that.
Yeah.
It's too magical for me. And then when I was looking in the Connecticut State Alternative Schools or whatever this is called, which is just so funny. It's alternative you know, non-mainstream. I saw this one Waldorf school, and I was like, that is exactly, I can remember laying with my phone in bed pregnant, and Zach was still in New Zealand. So I'm like on this journey by myself in the second trimester of living by myself, able to just obsess over my child's schooling. And I was like, this is it. This is his school. And then I looked at the cost and I said, okay, so maybe we'll be able to afford it when he's 10.
Right.
And so I just like swallowed that pill, and I was just like, well, I found the perfect school for him once he's 10, once we can afford it. And but it sat in my head because I was like, that is the school I need. And and then my child comes into the world, and we were living in downtown Milford, mm-hmm. and I was walking around downtown Milford. Momo and I, my child is Momo. We would always walk around downtown. I knew all the shop owners.
Wait, how old was the Momo now?
He's an infant at this age.
Okay.
But you know, he was about 1.5, 2, where I was like, I need to start really thinking beyond this corporate daycare that he's in.
Mm-hmm.
And I saw what they were doing there. Anyway, so I run into David Fernandez,
mm-hmm.
who's downtown Milford owner of beautiful restaurants,
yeah.
and he's a beautiful person. And I was talking to David I'm having a hard time with the schooling concept. And I said, where did you send your girls? Isn't that funny?
It's a really funny coincidence.
And he said in his beautiful French way, he sent them to Waldorf. And I said, I know exactly what you're talking about. I can't believe, I said, you sent your kids to that Waldorf school? And he was like, of course, it is, you know, the European, it's beautiful. And I'm like, oh, whatever David says is just magical too. And so I was like, but David, I want to send Momo there, but we cannot afford it. How did you afford it? And he was like, they now have a financial.
Variable tuition.
Variable tuition. He said, you put it out into the universe. He didn't say
the
universe.
Intention. Put out the intention.
And he was like, you need to go see for yourself and talk with them. They are amazing people. If you want that, you should go for it because it's so special. And not many people have such their eyes set on something like that. And they want people who know it's so good. And so I just... like I was on cloud 9 after that conversation with David that this was even a possibility. Like, it was unbelievable. And Zach came home from work that day, and Zach had no clue why I was so excited. And he just did not understand how huge this is for our life and for our child to have a Waldorf education. And so, you know, small world after small world, I was in the middle.
You've got a lot of words.
I was in the middle of doing this seminar at the university, and we had guest speakers, and one of the guest speakers was Joe DeFeo.
Oh, how funny.
And he was the only person I knew from Fairfield University, and Joe DeFeo, and he had this amazing presence. So I'm like name dropping all over right now. But so I show up to do the tour, and Therese does the tour with me, and I talked to Therese about being a professor, and she's like, oh, my husband works at Fairfield. And I said, you know, I only know one person at Fairfield. And I said, it's Joe DeFeo. And Therese says, that's my husband. And so I was just like, out of all those guest speakers, I was just like, I'm following Joe DeFeo, whatever he does. And I was just like, the universe is just like, I don't know many people. And here these people are Waldorf affiliated people. And it was, and so... So we're here.
So you're here.
And we're meant to be here.
And so now that you're here,
yes.
How would you describe a Waldorf kindergarten?
Magical. A Waldorf kindergarten is magical, truly. It's everything that we're supposed to be doing with our children is what they're doing in the kindergarten.
Which it's so funny that that's magical, but it really is.
It is.
It shouldn't, I mean, it shouldn't
it
be.
It should be what we're doing.
Yeah, but it is magical.
But, and so it's just, how would I describe it? Personally, what I see for my Momo is that all of his needs are being met.
Mm-hmm.
He's outside. He's playing. He's getting dirty. He's scooping up worms. He's investigating animals. He's investigating mud puddles. He's swinging if he wants to swing. He's playing monsters. That was his plan today. And I missed it. Anyway, he's playing monsters with his friends, with, you know, with sticks. The Waldorf kindergarten is just natural. And then Carrie, my soulmate, Momo's teacher. I mean, I keep kind of telling her that she's my soulmate, and she just keeps going past that. But anyway, truly.
I feel the same way about Isabel.
That's, yeah. And they're just so cool about it. Anyway, so, and Carrie puts this rhythm to this very natural day. And, you know, I love the concept of rhythm. They have a rhythm to their day, not a schedule.
Mm-hmm.
You know, not thinking of it as schedule. And it's rhythm because they go with the natural rhythm of what the kids present to them. And so it's kid-centric. It's child-centric, which is what we need with our children. It's child-centric. It's meeting their sensory needs with that outdoor time, that breathing in the fresh air. It grounds them. Then they come inside, and when they're inside, there's just the warmth of inside with these natural textures. I'll never forget, I was trying to help Carrie pick up one day, and I put all the skins into one basket, and Miss Carrie said, "Oh, this one's for beaver skins and this one's for rabbit skins." And I just was like, of course we have, you know, designated baskets, one for beaver skins and one for rabbit skins, because this is Waldorf. And it was just, they have all, and Morrison has like responsibilities in class and, you know, to tidy up. So, and then the soul food that is the daily snack, I just try to describe to outsiders about this daily snack, and I try to
That's the reason in the end that I chose the school when I was like trying to figure out it was the snack. I was like, I got to go here for the snacks.
It really does represent everything about the early childhood. Yeah. The rhythm that they can anticipate the same snacks every day of the week. And
the role modeling and the process.
And the role modeling of and how to nurture our bodies.
Yeah. And the reference of sharing the meal together.
And Momo loves serving.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm just like, these are life skills that if you love to serve for the rest of your life, I am good. I have done my job. My child loves to serve others and make sure everybody's well fed. And if you want more, get more. And oh, it's just amazing. And like we were telling our friends one time about the bread thing. And she was like, are you kidding me? They make bread? She was like, when I think of bread in a school, I think of it as like a plastic piece that's in the pretend kitchen is plastic bread,
right.
not
the dough and the smell of the yeast.
And Miss Carrie lets Momo, he's a taste tester mm-hmm. of everything, and she lets him taste test the dough because he cannot help it. Like, he has to taste test. And so the Waldorf kindergarten and then the traditions, this is something else that I could go on about, is the traditions of the Waldorf and the early childhood program. And the food is one of those traditions. Mm-hmm. And anyway, I'm going to stop there.
And what aspects of early childhood, this is your one. What aspects of early childhood do you cherish most?
Okay. So I could go on and on, obviously. But one of the things that I've come to appreciate about myself that I didn't realize is how much I cherish tradition.
Mm-hmm.
And As someone who was raised Catholic and no longer is Catholic, something that I miss about...
Like the ritual.
Is the ritual and tradition. And here, the time that it really, it was brought to tears was the Advent circle, Advent spiral. That the first Advent spiral we went to, which is every year the Advent spiral for the early childhood kids, it's complete darkness in the room. And the beautiful, like, music and someone reading and it's just silence. And how it's so thoughtfully set up, the Advent spiral, and how Momo and his classmates all sat there in reverence. And I realized that that's one of the things about rituals and tradition is the reverence and honoring and learning how to be quiet and still when you're supposed to be, not in these silly moments of like random sit still and be quiet. It's like a very designated time that they can anticipate and they know and they value and honor themselves. They have this intrinsic value for those moments. And the complete darkness, and then each child lit the candle and walked around, and each of their little personalities shows as they do the little walk.
It does so much. It's amazing. You wouldn't
so precious.
Think it would, but it, yeah.
And so I sat there and I was just, and that was out of, I would have never put Momo in that situation. Like, that would have been out of my comfort zone to expect that of him. But Carrie did. And I saw like these rituals, traditions bring out the best in my child and put him in a situation that is in a good way out of my comfort zone, his comfort zone. And it's such for a beautiful reason. And it's something now he can expect. And I just loved that it was about the season. It wasn't necessarily about any necessarily Godhead of any type. And so I love that we can have these traditions surrounding Mother Nature, Father Sky, and that's part of my child's life, and it adds a rhythm to all of our lives. So that's one of my top cherished things on my list of 1,000.
And so I think this might be the last question. What are the sounds and smells? That's my favorite part. Sounds and smells of the kindergarten classroom.
Can we say also textures?
Yes, you can say textures.
Because I think of those skins, and I when Zach, when my husband first went in there, and saw the classroom, he saw a seed pod, and it was like a basket of dried seed pods, and my husband was just sitting there and studying it, and he's like, I just want to play with these. Like, I'm taken in by them, and that there are, everything in there is natural or made some way of nature, and it really adds a difference when you're surrounded by things that are natural. So those textures of those furs, and then you have the kids chopping the vegetables and fruits for the day, and, you know, cotton napkins and real utensils and real bowls and real cups. And then when you walk in and they're cooking whatever it is they're cooking in the morning to prep for the day, you can smell it.
Yeah, and it's always like that mixed with beeswax. So it's like this beeswax bread, oniony millet kind of smell.
I never noticed the beeswax.
There's always an undertone of beeswax.
I don't know it well enough. Beeswax was like so new to me coming here, beeswax. And so, I don't even know. Is it bread day that often I'll pop in and I'm just like,
yeah.
I just want to stay here.
Yeah.
Oh, it's just unbelievable. And the kids singing is always such a sweet sound. And Momo has a song in his heart. He taught me babushka, babushka yesterday and today. And he taught me the hand motions. But is part of it. And you put your hands up and you wonder why babushka is not coming out. And so they're singing. It's a full sensory experience there.
You know, it's funny when you talk about loving the ritual, and I went to church some when I was little, and I don't now, and my kids don't now, but that's really, I think, some sort of religious practice is one of the only places where you sing with people in public. Like, yes. It's not something that we normally do anywhere. So that's another thing, in addition to having these rituals and traditions. I love that our children have an opportunity, like a regular, frequent opportunity to sing with other people.
Mm-hmm. Because yes, and it's not like to a recorded song. Yeah. It's like just...
It's so beautiful, and you really feel your voice is working together. So it feels like a joint project. Like, you really feel like you're working with someone when you're singing with them.
That's really true. I never thought about this. And that's what is I did love, too, about church is the singing part.
Yeah, that's what my mom, I think, misses the most from when she was little, was the singing, the music.
But, you know, I will say what about the Waldorf, my final thought, is that it's made us a better family, and it's made my husband and I better people. And so there's this trickle-down effect of goodness of Waldorf. You know, in our house, we do a lot of music now, and my husband has picked up the ukulele and has learned how to play it, and we do a lot of singing together, and we do very, very little TV watching, and we just really honor the silence also of the house and the silence of car rides, and letting Momo just tell us what's up rather than bombarding him with our adult centric whatever. And we think whole grains at home more, and wholesomeness, and we try to think of our daily rhythm with him, and we try to also get him outside when that seems so. We are such a better family unit because of Waldorf. So that's something that I knew would happen. Yeah. But I knew my husband took like a little bit of time before he just, his eyes opened of seeing this beauty and the power of all the adults in our child's life and at school. Like, this is we have such an impressionable little human. And what do we want him to be impressioned by?
Yeah.
So those are my final thoughts, I think.
Well, thank you very much
for
sharing your thoughts with us today.
Thank you.